Committee of the Whole will please come to order. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. If you would move House Bill 87 below House Bill 100, that will be the rest of the order for this afternoon.
The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 27. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 27, introduced by Representative Gingrey. School year required contact days. This bill was referred to Committee Number 4, Education, which respectfully recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Brechtel, Burkhart, Connolly, Crone, Laux, Teeters, no. Freeman, Croker, Madden, signed Representative Teeters, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 27 do pass. There are no standing committee amendments, and I turn the management of the bill over to the good Speaker Pro Tem.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There should be a handout on your desk, if you could find that. It's an LSO research memo dated October 1st, and it's titled Teacher-Student Contact Days. You'll want to find that to follow along with my explanation. This summer, I read a book called Outliers. I don't know if probably a lot of you probably read the same book, where he talked about statistical anomalies and how you can take a lot of times statistics that are outside, which are outliers, and actually those are the statistics that are actually the dispositive reason for the action. One of the chapters dealt with education, and what he did, he went through and talked about why do some countries do so much better with education than others. And one of the, there was actually two statistics that he discovered that were clearly dispositive or correlative to better test scores. One was the decrease in the number of days between breaks, the reduction of breaks, such as we have summer break here in the United States. Some countries that do really well are more on a year-round type schedule. The reason for that being that they've, of course, discovered that kids have trouble retaining information for through those long breaks. So where a teacher may get a kid to a certain level where they're at in May, by the time they come back in September, it takes about 2 months to get them back to the level they were at in May. So that was one issue as to trying to reduce the length of breaks so the child retains information. The second part that he was dealing with was just the length of school year. And when you look at the countries that do amazingly well, South Korea, Hong Kong, Taiwan, Finland, they're going very lengthy years, such as South Korea goes 225 days. I certainly am not proposing that we go to 225 days, but the book certainly got me thinking about ideas that we could work on as a body to improve education besides just throwing money at the problem. What are some other things that we could be looking at? What are some brainstorming that we can do to try to improve our educational system? So I asked LSO, I just was curious, how long do we go? And how long do other states go? And you'll see that on the back of that memo I gave you. And you'll see there that the majority of states in the union go 180 days per year. Now, we go 175 days. So all the bill was doing was going from 175 to 180 days so that we would be consistent with the majority of the other states. Now, that was the idea, but it's a funny thing about bills. You throw a bill out there, and you suddenly learn a lot more information about how the system actually works. Because what I thought probably wouldn't cost much, and you'll see if you see the physical note, suddenly you do have costs. Just the physical note shows just by expanding it by 5 days adds $1.2 million, and that's just transportation costs because we reimburse that 100%. Then the other issue that came out, and it's sort of reflected in that same memo on the front of it, talks about contact hours. And here's where it gets a little confusing. Under the statute, we say that you have to go to school 175 days. However, we then say, but you can petition for an alternative calendar. Now, if you petition for the alternative calendar, then you must still meet the contact hours. We don't actually set the contact hours. The Department of Education sets the contact hours. Elementary school at 900 hours, middle school at 1,050, and high school at 1,100. And it turns out that those contact hours are a lot more of what the school districts are actually looking at, is the contact hours. Because the school days, they can always go around because we allow them to petition for alternative calendar, and so then they can ask to adjust how many days they actually go. There are some school districts in this state that actually go quite a lot less than 175. They actually do four-day weeks, which is fine under the law so long as they meet the contact hours. What they end up having to do is longer days, and they go longer into the summer is what they do. That was the concept of the bill. The other part that became interesting was that even though we say it's 175 days is how long you have to go to school, you then look in the model, in the model it shows that we actually pay the school districts for 185 days to pay their teachers. The reason for that is the 175 for kids plus 10 days for professional development days to the teachers. So all the contracts we pay for are for 185. Now, school districts do whatever they want. For example, my school district actually does, they actually already go 180, and they do contracts with their teachers for 190, and they find the money somewhere else within their block grant. There was a wonderful discussion in Education Committee on this bill and really good thinking in it. And there's a very interesting Committee of the Whole amendment that that's going to be proposed here in a moment, which I think is worthy of discussing. I'm not opposed to this amendment. It changes the bill completely. It goes from the number of days to us, the legislature setting the contact hours instead of the Department of Ed, and it also increases the number of contact hours slightly. Again, the concept here was for us to start thinking about some other ideas on ways to improve education, and this was just one idea out there that perhaps a longer school year, even though I'm only talking about 5 days here, but should we be expanding the day, and if we're expanding the number of days, should we start talking about lessening our breaks? If you expand the days, that lessens the breaks, and so then you're sort of solving two of the issues that are out there. And I will stop explaining it at that point, because I think there's an amendment out there that's even more interesting than what I was proposing.
We do have a Committee of the Whole amendment. Representative Burkhart.
Madam Chairman, thank you. Madam Chairman, members of the 61st, I move Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 and ask for your favorable consideration. I'll explain the amendment. In talking about contact days, we're also talking about increasing the amount of transportation we must pay for. Additionally, it would be possible for a school district to add those 5 days and not really add any contact time between the teachers and the students. The amendment fixes that issue in that it requires a certain level of contact time or hours with the student during the school year. It leaves the 175 days in place and adds proportionally contact hours that would be equivalent to going to 180 days. It also lets the legislature specify the contact hours in the classroom for the three levels that the Department of Education utilizes. And that's kind of it in a nutshell. It achieves the requirement of adding time between the teachers and the students, giving them more time together and hopefully letting them learn a little better. It amounts to about a little bit more than a 2% change in the contact hours without increasing the bus transportation costs or anything else. And with that, I'll take questions.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Rising on and in support of the amendment, I think what the amendment does, even though it does take the bill in another direction, is that it accomplishes the idea of requiring districts to maybe get away from these four-day school weeks. And I'm not terribly comfortable with a four-day school week. But if we require it to increase the number of contact hours by 5 days a year, it'll be very difficult for four-day school weeks to continue to work in this state, which I think is a good thing. 3 days off in a week is not conducive to providing continuity in learning. And, this is a different direction that takes the bill. It is germane to the bill, I believe. But it also accomplishes this without increasing transportation costs by over $1 million. So for me to support the bill at this point, I'm going to have the Committee of the Whole amendment. And we brought it to the floor because this is the year to talk about this stuff. And I do appreciate the good Speaker Pro Tem for bringing the issue up so that we can have the debate on the floor. It is definitely pertinent to the conversation.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to state that I was in support of the amendment, even though it totally changes my bill to something totally different. I think that's the beauty of our system, is that someone has an idea, they bring it down here, and then we all think a little differently and have different diversity. And I think this is a good change, and this is a much better way to go. And I'd urge you to vote in favor of the Committee of the Whole amendment.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question. I heard testimony that this will make it harder on the four-day weeks, and I guess I'm just curious how, and I'm not terribly comfortable with the four-day school week either, but I think some of our local elected school boards have chosen to do that for their own communities. So I just wonder if how that would work, and I guess as I read this, I don't understand that if it specifically prohibits adding days. I mean, I think there's still freedom. It could be accomplished in a couple ways as I read this, either through extended hours or the extended days. Is that how the sponsors of this amendment's intent on this? Thank you.
Representative Burkhart.
Madam Chairman, good representative. Yes, they could still add days. They could still use an alternative schedule. It's merely getting approximately 25 to 30 more hours a year in, how the school district finds best. It doesn't prescribe how they should do it.
Chairman McComey.
Well, thank you, Madam Chairman. My concern was, and I think it's just been addressed, but one of our better performing schools in Fremont County is a four-day-a-week school. And so I would hate to see this happen. And that's not to say that our schools all perform well in Fremont County, but this one does very well if you look at individual student achievement, and they have a four-day week.
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I wanted to rise in favor of the amendment. I was one of the, I believe, two of us that voted against the original bill in committee because I thought it would impose unfair restrictions on schools that had different plans, such as a four-day week or whatever. But I am very much in favor of the concept of increasing the time that teachers spend with students, and I think with this amendment it accomplishes that. So I would rise in favor of the amendment and of the amended bill.
Representative Connolly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question for the bringer of the amendment. Though I voted in favor of the bill in committee, on second thought and third thoughts and visiting with LSO staff, I had some concerns about the teacher professional days that we have in the model now and is also in the new recalibration model, where the evidence indicates that teachers do better in the classroom with having 10 professional days. And the bill as it currently exists wouldn't allow for continuing those 10 professional days. So I'm curious with the bringer of the amendment if we can maintain those 10 professional days.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. There is nothing in this legislation that's going to deal with professional days the way I read the amendment. The money's in the model, and the days are in the model, so I don't anticipate that the professional development will be affected by this amendment. I could be wrong. We can check on that. That's why we have three readings, I guess. But that's not how I'm reading it.
Representative Burkhart.
Madam Chairman, that's not how I read it either. It merely specifies a minimum number of contact hours, and that's the only change in there. The 175 days are currently considered contact days. The 10 days of teacher development stays in there. The 175 is already in statute, along with the contact day or the professional development days.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. That's 53 hours. How many hours in a school day are we actually looking at on average, particularly on the four-day school week of several districts, one being in our area? And secondly, how would you expect the districts to account for the hours to, and who do they report to that they've satisfied the number of hours as opposed to the way it's done now?
Representative Burkhart.
To answer the last part of that question first, it would be in the same manner they currently report contact hours to the Department of Education. They currently have a requirement in there. As for the hours in a day, I think high school works out to be somewhere around 7.1 hours per day, and I believe the grade school is around 5.6, if I remember right. So the few extra hours in there could be added into the days. They could extend the school year. They could do it however the local school district chooses to do it. Currently, the requirements, and that's the reason for the odd number of hours in grade school, is 900. So all we're adding is 26 hours to the year, and then on through middle school and high school.
Representative Freeman.
Thank you. I am in the trenches when this all happens, and I work in a district that has an alternative schedule. And what happens is that we have 16 in-service days. And to compensate for that, what we do is we add 3 or 4 or 5 minutes to the day. And then what happens is we put the in-service days in during the school year. The Speaker Pro Tem, I think, has come up with something that's very valuable. I think that if I can be with my students more often and on more days, I have more opportunities. Oftentimes what happens when you teach is you have a great idea and you get something started and it bombs. So you have the next day. But if you keep on restricting the number of days, you can't bomb very often because you're not going to be very effective. The other thing that happens is I teach high school, and it's hard to keep people's attention. And if you make the periods longer and longer, you meet the contractual or the number of minutes that we're trying to put in here. But what happens is after, and you can insert whatever number you want, 45 minutes, 47 minutes, 52 minutes, what happens is you're done, and they're ready to move on. I really like the idea of being with my students more frequently. I do, and many of my profession probably don't like that. They think that the three-day weeks and the teacher development days are a little bit more valuable than what I think they are. But I think if we're trying to expand contact, useful contact with students, we would be much better off doing it in days instead of minutes that we would add on to the school day. Thank you, Speaker.
Representative Gurr.
Madam Chair, I commend my colleagues on their hard work on this bill, but I want to step back from the technicalities and focus on a little policy. And, you know, I know education is going to be a big part of this legislative session, and we've got quite a bills in the down that are coming down the pipeline. And, you know, just more is not always better, and I hate to see us micromanaging. We are going to have directives to our districts to do a better job. This let our districts make these decisions. It's bad enough that we have a federal mandate on the number of contact hours. I just wish to step back and look at the policy rather than argue on these technicalities and ask ourselves, is this something better for our districts to deal with?
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Echoing the previous speaker's thoughts, it just seems to me like this is the year when we do need to really look at our educational system and try to drill down to the bold reforms that are so necessary to truly transform a system that's not working for far too many of our children and our students. And mandating how many hours you spend with your butt in the seat seems to me like a less than effective use of our time, and something far better left to the local communities and the school boards to determine.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think the word we're supposed to all use for Speaker Pro Tem's bills today, I've heard, if you got the memo, another brilliant bill by the Speaker Pro Tem. And I appreciate, this is a topic, you know, I think we need to talk about. There's no doubt, you look at Wyoming, we're below the national average. I think this is good conversation. We fund 185 days, 175 of them are teacher contact days. There's probably a couple different ways to skin this cat. You could cut back some of the, you know, teacher training days and do this thing and not, wouldn't cost us a dime. You could lengthen the whole thing. It would cost us money if you add days. This is an attempt to add some time. And if you look at it, it's about 25 hours per grade level, really at no cost. And I think if we're going to do this, this amendment, I think, is probably the best way to do it, as opposed to the bill itself. So I applaud the bringer of this. But I would say this, and I don't really, it doesn't really matter to me personally as a teacher, but I think I'm trying to think and sort this out in my mind. Right now we have the Wyoming Board of Education sets these hours, not the local schools. And the local school boards then have to implement it. And now we're saying that we're going to take over that duty from the Wyoming Board of Education. I'm not sure yet. I'm still working that. I'll probably take me a couple readings to figure that out, where we want to go with that. But if you do want to pass this bill forward, and I think it's important to talk about this, and we probably need to move in this direction. You know, I think this is probably the right way to go. And speaking about, since we're on, and I don't want to get point of order here, but it was brought up by the sponsor of the legislation about the outliers, and I think it's important for us to all remember, because most of us are in our 40s, 50s, 60s, except for the gentleman from the Northeast, but most of us, we were in schools at a different time than what they are today. And you know, I think back when I was a kid, there was no special education. You didn't know what that was. Those kids were all shipped to a special school. They weren't integrated. You never saw that. Today in my high school, there's at least 8 classrooms. So it's changed facilities. It's changed all those things. And I think the thing about outliers, and when you compare America to the rest of the world, it's really important to think that our great democracy is the only one like it, and it's very, very expensive. We educate every kid. We don't throw away one kid. And you can't say that for any other country in the world. And so, yeah, when you aggregate our test scores, this and that, but I'll tell you, the best kids in America are still the best in the world. And the rest of the world is coming to college here. There's only one Silicon Valley. There's only one place where this stuff goes, and it's in America. And so I know we've been hard on ourselves, but I tell you, this body, and particularly this house, done a lot of good work for education in Wyoming, and it's making a difference. And I guess I would say one more thing. This is what's going on in education now. When I was a young teacher, when you were kids, the teacher taught. Used to get a book. What do I teach? I teach this curricula. It's totally flipped. It's 180 now. What does the student have to learn? That's the key now. That's what drives all our decisions. It's not what I teach. That's not what's important. It's what did my students learn? And so let's keep that in mind. That's where we're going with education. So if this will increase student learning, let's do it and move forward. But I applaud the amendment, and I'd support the amendment, and we can talk about the bill some more. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to clarify, and the last speaker did this also, but I just wanted to clarify also. Presently, it's the Department of Ed that sets the hours. So what we're trying to do is, what the beauty of this amendment is, it actually is bringing the power back to the people, back to the people's house, back to the legislature to set the number of hours, not a bureaucratic agency to set the hours. The school districts don't set the hours. The school districts comply with them. So if we think those hours are too much, we certainly can reduce them down. But there's no further questions. I think we should vote on the amendment.
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Again, I would ask your support on the amendment. We add about 2% of hours. I went to a high school that literally we were in school 8 hours a day. And we had contact time with those teachers. I remember spending many evenings on additional work with teachers who would willingly stay. And I would imagine under an alternative scheme that could count as those hours also. That school today, as it did then, counted its success in the amount of non-state scholarship money the graduating class received. And literally, it was a tremendous amount of money. That was their measure of success. Part of that was due to the amount of time we spent with those teachers, who were all wonderful, even the ones I disliked. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are going to stand at ease. We're getting a clarification on a technicality on this bill. We'll stand at ease till the sound of the gavel. Committee of the Whole will please come to order. Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ladies and gentlemen, there's a point of order on this particular bill because of an appropriation and an interpretation. We've determined that this should be re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, and so we're going to go through a little process here to refer that bill back to Appropriations and then move on to the next bill on general file.
Representative Burkhardt.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move to withdraw Amendment Number 1 to this House bill.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I respectfully withdraw my motion on House Bill 27.
I'm sorry, Chairman Teeters. Without objection, Representative Burkhardt's motion is accepted. And now Chairman Teeters, sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I respectfully withdraw my motion on House Bill 27.
Without objection, it is so, it is done. Thank you for your patience, ladies and gentlemen. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 44. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill 44, introduced by Representative Gingrey, an act relating to annuity premium taxes. This bill was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Blickery, Childers, Miller, Peterson, Semlek. No, Camel, Madden, Vronish. Excused, Goggles. Signed, Representative Childers, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem? Chairman Childers.
Madam Chair, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Bill Number 44 do pass, and I will turn the bill over to the bringer from District 23 for discussion.
Now, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I'll try another bill. Unless somebody wants to do something with this one. This one deals with annuity taxes. I apologize. I'm still thinking about the last bill. On annuity taxes, what the issue here was that if you go buy an annuity, it pays out. So if you keep taking the payouts, the tax would never affect you. But you are allowed to surrender your annuity. And if you surrender, in Wyoming, we charge a 1% tax on that amount. And actually, this is handled through your contract with the company that you're buying through. What they do, the company actually pays the tax, and then through your contractual agreement with the company, they charge that back to you. Or actually, they would not have to if they did not want to. But for the most part, they charge that back to you, that tax, that 1%. And so what we're talking about is this 1% tax on annuities.
Madam Chairman, could I interrupt with a point of order?
Yeah, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Madam Chairman, this bill also contains a change in a fund balance and also needs to be re-referred to appropriations.
Chairman Childers.
Madam Chair, I would withdraw my motion on House Bill 44, and I would like to re-refer this bill, House Bill 44, to Appropriations.
Chairman Childers, your withdrawal, without objection, it is so noted, and at this time you cannot re-refer during Committee of the Whole. You'll have to do that later on when the Speaker takes the chair. Thank you. So, the next bill for our consideration.
Well, Madam Chairman.
Yes.
Representative Korberg.
Yes. Well, Madam Chairman, I guess I would like some clarification on what just happened. This is a decrease in revenue that's going to the general fund. It's not about appropriating additional revenue to make a program happen. So, from a chairman's standpoint, I'd like some clarification. Otherwise, I mean, we've got a lot of bills out there that have a fiscal impact that we're not re-referring to appropriations. So I'd like some clarification, Madam Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I've had a great education in the last half hour speaking with four attorneys, the House Chief Clerk, and others. If you will refer to our rule 8.5A, it says a bill containing an appropriation or which requires an appropriations or a change in funds may be assigned to a standing committee other than appropriations, but if so, it shall be re-referred to the appropriations committee upon being reported back to the committee it was first assigned. Because this bill contains a $600,000 change to the general fund, it needs to be re-reported back to appropriations. That way it can be included on the goldenrod, and we can show the fiscal effects of our bills. And so the Appropriations Committee has asked, or the Appropriations Chair has asked that those bills be re-referred to her committee so that we ensure at the end of this session that our budget is indeed balanced, and the only way to do that is to run it through that process. And so that's why the committee chair has asked that I ask that these bills be referred to her committee, and so that's what I'm doing.
Chairman Berger.
And thank you, Madam Chairman, and just also because I know there are folks out there that are disappointed in not having the argument on the bill and the furthering of the bill, we will try to start those hearings in House Appropriations next Monday as they come into us. And so we're starting to get a backlog on that. So I appreciate your consideration.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we'll move on with Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 72. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill 72, introduced by Representative Madden, an act relating to the State Superintendent of Public Instruction regarding teacher merit pay. This bill was referred to Committee Number 4, Education, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Brechtel, Burkhart, Conley, Freeman, Croker, Krohn, Laux, Madden, Teeters. Signed, Representative Teeters, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Teeters?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with recommendation that House Bill 72 do pass. And I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment, which will be explained in conjunction with the bill by the good representative.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. As the chairman of the committee said, I'm going to go through the bill and I'll highlight where the standing committee amendments are appear and what the rationale was behind them at the time. And then I'll finish up by talking about kind of the genesis or the thought process that went into developing the bill. In a nutshell, what this does is establish a mechanism within the Education Department to develop some details that are necessary if we're going to embark on kind of changing the pay structure to include a component that includes merit pay, something that we don't have right now. And there's, you know, we're looking at a kind of a summer study that would be ready at the last meeting of the Education Committee during the interim, and we'll make decisions at that time in preparation for the budget session that would be coming up a year from now. So basically, if you look at Section 1, It reflects the fact that there will be the state superintendent will form a special committee, and I had originally written may form a special committee, but there's some sentiment that we wanted to make sure that committee was formed. So one of the components of the standing committee amendment was to change the word may in line 14 to shall. Okay? And then another aspect of the standing committee amendment also is relevant to the page 291, where I've outlined in the original bill who may be included on this committee. And after we took some testimony and so on, there was desire to include representatives of school boards and teachers, so they have some input into the structure of this merit pay plan. And then we get into line 15. There's a new component to the list of what they need to come up with. And of course, when you're going to have a kind of a feasibility committee like this, one of the options should have been to make a determination whether we should have a merit pay plan in the first place. And then the other ones kind of follow from that and say, well, if there is one, some of the criteria for measurement of teacher performance has to be identified. And not only for just the traditional school teachers, but special ed and lots of other things as far as positions in the system. We also have to deal with, you know, merit pay, whether it's mandatory or whether it would be an option with the provisio that if you're not going to participate in merit pay, that you wouldn't have that the merit pay increment for other uses in, as far as the model goes. So it's a kind of a timely bill. I can give you a little bit of a background of how I got so interested in it. In another capacity as a state representative, I serve on the State Employee Compensation Commission, and they're about a year ahead of the school system in adopting a program for a bonus program for state employees based upon merit and performance and these kind of things. And actually, who precipitated this and brought this to the Employee Compensation Commission were managers, department heads, administrators, and things like this. And their reasoning was that there's many jobs throughout state government that there's few opportunities for promotion and improving oneself in the pay scale. And yet there's vast differences from one employee to another in terms of their performance. Right now, with state employees, the only way to get pay improvements is simply to put in the time. You know, you can put in the time, and as you get these step increases for longevity and so on, you get a raise. But they think they're and are quite insistent that it takes more than that to compensate truly outstanding employees. And it occurred to me during those discussions that we have exactly the same problem in school districts. In school districts, they face the same barrier in the sense that right now teachers can improve their pay really by two ways. They can do it by putting in the time, just like state employees do. The longer they're there, the more longevity pay they get, and this kind of thing. Or they can also do things like added education. The only problem with this system that we've used so far is that people that research performance of school teachers find that neither one of these things really matter. You don't get an increase in performance with longevity, or you don't get necessarily an increase in merit or performance when you're dealing with putting in time taking graduate classes towards a master's degree. But the one thing that research is showing now, unequivocally, is what does matter is merit pay. That school teachers do respond to merit pay, and there's some frustration on the part, particularly of outstanding teachers, that they see themselves really just going up the pay ladder, more or less collinear with very marginal teachers. So I have passed out, and you should have it in your box somewhere. There's a public or a article that struck me in the paper here. I did too bring it up here. But anyway, this come out of a famous or a well-known daily paper in this state. And I want to refer to you it's third to the last paragraph. You know, they were just talking about some of the highlights in this state-by-state study. And actually, I will point out that, you know, I think Wyoming got a little bit better than mediocre grades that are cited here, but that's not my issue today. I'm not criticizing the paper in any way. They've got more ink and paper than I do. But look at the third to the last paragraph where they report some aspects of the report reflect positive factors towards a strong teaching profession such as performance-based bonuses. And, you know, if you want to go to that entire study, they will show you, they'll refer to professor or set of professors that have concluded that that's something that's really missing as far as generating results in the classroom. So that's kind of the preface of it, of how I got interested in it. As I did more and more research, I found that this is a trend in public education. You see it developing in a state just south of us. Another state to the east has got a couple of professional football teams. And there's some other places as well. And again, in this article that I'm referring to in this newspaper article, they will tell you where they're using it. And actually, they've got some results. They've got a track record that demonstrates that it does work. Now, the other thing that couples in with this is that during the interim, there is a report prepared by a professor at our university studying the impacts of the large pay adjustment. I think it happened in 2005 and 2006, where there was a kind of a dichotomous jump in pay of $6,000 to $8,000 all in one year. And there was argument then that this would have a positive effect on school performance. Well, they did the study as of this last year, and they found out that virtually none of the intended results occurred. You know, they're expecting there'd be less turnover, and the less turnover was only reflected in school teachers that were near retirement. And when they noticed they got a $7,000 jump, they said, "Whoa, I can't retire now. I'm going to hang around for 3 years because that means that my retirement will go up $1,100 a month." So anyway, the turnover was reduced, but it was an exogenous reason. It had nothing to do with what they were anticipating. Anyway, the tests that teachers take prior to getting out of school, we thought that we'd end up with better candidates applying for school jobs. That did not happen. We thought they would come from better quality schools. That did not happen. In fact, the number of graduates of our university actually went down, or the percentage of hires actually went down, and we lost ground on that. And I think that's an unintended consequence. And then they had some other stuff in there about they expected better types of degrees that teachers would have, and that didn't occur. So at least we can say that it did not produce the unintended results, and it, at worst, I guess you could say that passing out money this way actually wasted a lot of money. I look at this merit pay as being somewhat complementary to a continuing education bill that's being considered also this session, or continuing contract bill, I should say. Or you can look at this one actually as being independent. You know, you can look at the continuing contract or tenure aspect. You know, that's kind of a carrot type bill, I call it. Or no, that's a stick bill. This is a carrot bill. If what we're looking at is that we're trying to reward the the meritorious employees for their work. And you know, we're thinking there's probably around 30% in a typical school district where this would apply. but it seems incongruent to me to focus on the 1 or 2% of underproducers and at the same time ignore exceptionalism of our best school teachers at the other end of the bell curve for faculty. In fact, I guess I would really not like to see that tenure bill actually progress if we did not have a merit bill to accompany our thinking on this. Now, the other reasons that have been identified is that, you know, the pay plans that we have now fosters mediocrity. A school teacher, if they're smart, they realize that they're going to get the same raise as the worst teacher in the school system, so they kind of know that they've got that much play in their behavior or in their choice of teaching mechanics. and the ironic thing is that what we're doing is using a mediocrity type pay plan, and we're expecting, as you hear all over this around here this session, we're expecting exceptionalism from our students. And that seems incongruent to me, that you can't be talking out of one side of your mouth that we want exceptional students, but we're going to continue to pay you as if you're mediocre. Well, that's about it. The summation of the issue is that you know, this is about the only profession where you don't have a recognition of merit pay. Used car dealers, can you imagine what you would have if you didn't have merit pay for used car dealers? In corporate America, they rely on merit pay to retain their very best, and we need to do that also. Main argument you hear about merit pay is, it's hard to be objective, you know, or it's hard to get principals to go to that extra trouble, and it's a lot of extra work for them, and we hate to put that on them. You know, I really think that's their primary job, is to maintain or try to understand what's going on in the classroom and see to it that it continues in a positive fashion year by year. I think the status quo simply discourages our very best and brightest teachers from staying in the profession, another thing that they found in that study from our university. And I've heard that, and you've probably heard it over and over by school teachers and others associated with the public school system. This was unanimous. This bill was unanimously supported by all of the members of the committee. One of the famous, well-known employee association that represents school districts, they endorse it too. In fact, there was speaking against it at all in the committee. So I'd urge you to seriously consider this bill, and I think the chairman wants to introduce a committee of the whole amendment at this time. Thank you.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move committee of the whole amendment number 1 to House Bill 72 and would ask for...
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. We have not voted on the standing committee amendment.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay.
So is there any other
question
discussion
on standing committee amendment?
Okay. Question being called. All those in favor of standing committee amendment number 1 to House Bill 72, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing committee amendment number one has been adopted. We are in committee of our Chairman Teeters.
Which standing committee do we just do? The corrected one, the short one, or this one?
Corrected one.
Representative Patton, we did Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 72, the corrected copy, which was just a spelling error, if I am correct, I believe. Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 72, and would ask for your favorable consideration. This essentially just allows the state legislature to have two positions, one from this body and one from the body across the hall, on the committee, and also provides an appropriation to the LSO for their compensation. And I would ask for your favorable consideration.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The only thing I want to add there is that this was a standing committee amendment was asked for by the superintendent. She wants to make sure that we have legislative oversight, or at least a legislative presence on the committee, so that they know they're going in the right track and that we know the sequence of events kind of intimately. And that's the reason for it is really because of the superintendent. Thank you.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate the sponsor of the bill. And I think this is a great concept, and I think you're taking the right approach. And what he said is absolutely right. I mean, for a teacher to kind of so-called advance in their career, and it's like my buddies who have become principals, I tell them they have to get out of education and become an administrator. And I say with a little joke, because then I've been go on to be your boss and whatnot, but I think he's taking the right approach. I like this amendment, the Committee of the Whole amendment, because my concern with the bill initially was we're the policymakers. This is a policy that we ought to drive, not the Department of Ed. And so hopefully in further amendments we can even increase our presence on this, because this is really our thing, and we ought to drive that and determine what the policy is. So thank you, and I urge your support of the amendment and the bill.
Is there any other discussion on the amendment? Question being called. All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 72, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 72 is adopted. Is there any other discussion on the bill? Representative Patton.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. If I understand correctly, what we're trying to do here is to have a study that is going to outline a proposed merit pay plan. And if my understanding is correct, then I would draw your attention to line 18 on page 2. At the end of the word optional, it states, provided that if an optional, a district not participating in the plan would not receive any appropriation intended for use for teacher salaries under the merit pay plan. It would strike me that a friendly and consistent amendment would be to strike that language. I don't understand how we take the position now with a plan that hasn't been developed, put that kind of a provision on it. We could do that on second amendment if that were a second reading, if that would be appropriate. And then with your consent, Mr. Chairman, I'd be willing to do that.
Representative Madden.
The whole reason that was placed in there is to avoid the pitfall that could be, you know, really could destroy this thing. If we had school districts that said, well, you know, we just don't think merit pay is any good for our district, but we'd just like to take the money instead. I think that as policymakers and setting the parameters within this bill, that we're going to tell them right up front we're not going to have that, that it's going to have to be, if there's going to be an option to be in merit pay or not, it's the option whether that increment of pay will be forthcoming, and that's the reason it's in there. And I, at this point, I think it's important that it stay in. Thank you.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Teeter's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 72 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? House Bill 72 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Madam Chairman, would you move House Bill 76 below House Bill 100?
All right, ladies and gentlemen, our next bill for our consideration then would be House Bill 86. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill 86, introduced by Representative Croker, an act relating to compulsory school attendance. This bill was given to the Education Committee, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Brechtel, Burkhart, Conley, Freeman, Croker, Crone, Laux, Madden, Teeters. Signed, Representative Teeters, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Teeters?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 86 do pass. I don't believe there are any standing committee amendments. And I will turn the bill over to the representative from the land of oil.
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. In a previous session, this is really just a simple bill that's really five words long. In a previous session, a statute was passed with the intent of making it harder to drop out of a public school if you were over the age of 16 and under the age of 18, and that statute required that anybody who was going to drop out had to have a meeting, the family of the student had to have a meeting with administration of the school. It is a great concept that we support, but one possible unintended consequence of the bill is a very, very narrow window that really only applies to students between the ages of 16 and 18 who are being homeschooled, who have just moved into the state of Wyoming. If they had not notified the local school district that they were homeschooling, there was some question as to whether or not they could be considered truant or not, and whether or not they would be eligible for some of the programs through the public schools that homeschool families are allowed to take advantage of. So this just closes the loophole by adding the words enrolled in a public school to make it clear that it applies to students who are currently in school that want to drop out and doesn't create any undue restrictions on homeschool families for kids between the ages of 16 and 18. I will stand for any questions.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Teeter's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 86 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. House Bill 86 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 100. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill 100, introduced by Representative Shepperson, an act relating to game and fish land acquisition. This bill was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Bonner, Botten, Connolly, Davison, Yagi, McKim, McComey, Petroff, Shepperson. Signed, Representative McComey, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman McComey?
Well, thank you, Mr. Majority Whip. And I bring you House Bill 100, Game and Fish Land Acquisition, and I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that to do so with the recommendation that House Bill 100 do pass. And I'd like to turn the explanation of the bill over to the fine lady that was occupying the chair a minute ago from Natrona County, and for the explanation of her bill.
Representative Shepperson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, when I presented this bill in committee, I said this is just a tiny little bill with a little bit of a consequence. And after hearing some more of the testimony on this bill, this is just a tiny little bill that if we don't pass has a huge consequence to the state of Wyoming. What happened, what brought this bill to our attention is a case out of Natrona County on the North Platte River. And for those of you in the legal profession who followed it, it's was tried in district court, was then sent appealed to the Supreme Court, and the ruling was in favor of the Game and Fish and the in favor of a department that handles our wildlife, and they did not comment on part of the law or part of the appeal that we're going to talk about here today. And that's part of what they wrote about was the prescriptive easement portion and the adverse possession portion of that. Now, we had questions in committee, what is a prescriptive easement? And basically, a prescriptive easement has to be open, adverse, and hostile use for 10 years. And then what can happen is if my land is being used openly and adversely and hostily for 10 years, then another person or another entity can come and claim ownership or use of that property. So it's basically a takings. Now, we need to have some of our departments in the state have the right for eminent domain and for takings. But the government or the department that this impacts should not have that power. This department needs to work with landowners. It needs to protect private property rights. Because what happens is if they are given these powers, then as private property owners, we are going to shut down access to our land. Because what was said in the court case was it's not a one person or one entity trying to get a prescriptive easement, but it's the entire public. And that was what was very concerning to a lot of landowners in Natrona County. Now, again, the courts did not even comment on this. And it's, we think it's because they were so scared to touch this, they didn't want to touch it with a 10-foot pole. As one of my good friends that I work with across the aisle from said, our government should be open and transparent, not open and notorious. And so even the threat of having this department have this power can be harmful for landowners. So basically what this is doing is just saying to this department that we want you guys to work with landowners. We want you to improve walk-in areas. We want to have multiple use of our private land, but it needs to be done in a productive way, not in a way that is abusive of land power and land takings. And with that, I would stand for any questions.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a concern about this bill. I've expressed it with the sponsor. Article 1, Section 33 of the Wyoming Constitution says that private property shall not be taken or damaged for public or private use without just compensation, which means that the only way that the state of Wyoming can acquire property is for compensation, and they can't adversely possess property the way that I read that constitutional amendment. My concern is, well, I agree with the philosophy of the bill and the thoughts of the good sponsor. My concern is that we create an ambiguity in statutes where none exists now. And because we've, by implication, said, well, you can't do it here, but we haven't prohibited it other places, that gives the courts a lever by which they can argue that there is adverse possession, even though our Constitution expressly forbids it. And so I was just wondering if the sponsor had any comments regarding those concerns.
Representative Shepherdson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I hate to get into constitutional debate with someone a lot smarter than me, but, you know, right now in our statutes, it does limit them. It says that they cannot, you do this using the power of eminent domain. And it's basically the same thing. We're adding adverse possession or prescriptive easement. So I don't think we're changing it a whole lot. The other thing is I would be happy to sponsor a bill with the good majority floor leader, like I stated in committee to our committee members, that says that no departments can do this. And that way there'd be no ambiguity. But I don't think that would happen. I don't think that should probably happen. But this is just a safeguard. Obviously, the department thought they could do that. They listed it in their disclosure, in their brief. I'm not sure what the technical term is called, that said that this department can obtain a prescriptive easement for public access. So if they think they can, then why would we let them go down this road? We need to nip it in the bud right now. Like I said, this department cannot and should not use the threat of that. It will harm landowner and this department's relationships forever.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I'm confused. And it has, you know, I agree that the Constitution absolutely says that private property rights must be respected and that if they are taken under any circumstances, that landowner is justly compensated. But it sounds to me like this fact has occurred where this agency has claimed through adverse possession and or prescriptive easement and been able to successfully or at least up to this point been successful in accomplishing that taking. So if that's the case, I guess I'm thinking that we have to do something. My gut instincts say this cannot stand, this is not right, that an agency should be able to take someone's private property. So maybe the smart lawyers in the room can help me with that.
Representative Shepherdson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And one other thing I wanted to bring up is, you know, in this department's memorandum of support, it clearly states in Wyoming, and this is their opinion, this is what their lawyers, the Attorney General said, in Wyoming, government entities can acquire real property by adverse possession or prescription, even though such powers are not expressly granted to them by statute. So that's what our state government is saying. To me, that just, hello, red flag. That should not be the case. And so this is what we are trying to prevent. But that's what they, and their attorneys, that's what they feel they can do.
Chairman McConey.
Thank you, Mr. Whip. I'm sure glad he keeps that up in his office, not out here. But anyway, in committee, one of the things that the impact of this bill, if it doesn't pass, could have, is that you're going to see private landowners start saying to the Game and Fish Commission, well, we're not going to sell you these rights of way anymore. We're not going to allow you to cross our property because you might be able to use then, after it's been there for a certain period of time, this prescriptive taking. That was some of the discussion. And it's a real thing that can happen, and the Game and Fish personnel there at the meeting were concerned about that and expressed that concern. So that's one of the things that the bill actually might, they looked at it like it might be something that might help them gain additional rights to private property and things like that. So just thought I'd fill the body in on that.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the things that was brought up in this committee also was, and the good chairman just brought up one of the points I was going to say, that landowners will just quit doing this. But the adverse possession means use over time. And so if you give an easement to somebody, and in this case Game and Fish, for access, for fishing, hunting, which, you know, I think is great, but if it's there for 10 years, the courts will recognize that as possession. And so this does need to be addressed, and I think it's in the landowner's best interest and the Game and Fish best interest, and I think it will be a good PR thing so more landowners will allow access to hunting and fishing on their land, as was brought out in testimony. So the adverse possession was the thing that bothered me, along with prescriptive easements. So I think this is just a good bill and needs to be done.
Chairman Brown.
Mr. Chairman, this came up. I know where this came from, and I have the opinion right here if anybody cared to read it. It's a rather notorious easement case close to the big city in the center of the state on the big river that runs by the big city. Okay? Everybody know where we are? Now, that was a convoluted set of facts that went back many years. And the state thought that it had acquired an easement. It entered into an agreement for an easement along the big river at the point where it intersects the highway that runs south from the big city. And the state thought that that easement, which was memorialized in an agreement, had then been formalized in a written document. I'm not sure if it was called an easement or a deed, that was recorded in the county records. This lawsuit about this easement involved a hyper-technical interpretation of the language in the document that was recorded in the county records. And it was trying to be interpreted that instead of running from the thread of the river to 100 feet above the water high water line, it ran from the high water line to 100 feet above the high water line, which meant that the only time that easement was useful for the public, which had paid a lot of money for it, was when the high water was at the high water line or above. So that case went to court, and I'm sure many of you have read about it in the newspaper. And in that case, when deciding on that interpretation of the easement, our Supreme Court said, look, there was an agreement, there was consideration paid, the agreement clearly was for this. In fact, I think the district judge in the big city up in the middle of the state said something to the effect that if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's probably a duck. That wasn't what he said, but he said something, common sense is what he talked about. And so the end result of that case was that the court said the document recorded in the county records was inconsistent with the agreement and told the state to go back and draft it correctly. And in that case, the court said, because we affirm the district court's grant of summary judgment in favor of the commission, that's the Game and Fish Commission, there is no reason for the commission to pursue a claim of prescriptive easement and no need for us to consider the landowner's contention that the commission cannot claim a prescriptive easement under Wyoming law. The court made, they said, we're not going to decide it. We don't have to consider whether the claim that there is a prescriptive easement, nor do we consider the landowner's contention, which very well might be what the majority floor leader said, that you can't get a prescriptive easement because of the Constitution. I'm just telling you, it was a convoluted set of facts. And so the court refused to consider a prescriptive easement. Nonetheless, the department made that claim in the alternative and said, well, if we can't make that claim stick under the agreement and under the document that was recorded, then in the alternative, we plead that perhaps the state acquired a prescriptive easement. That was all to be decided and never was decided. So what are the elements of a prescriptive easement? What would the state or the department have to satisfy in terms of elements before it could obtain an easement by prescription? The party claiming a prescriptive easement must prove each of the four elements. Number one, adverse use. That means use adverse to the use of another. Number two, claim of right under title or claim of right. You can't just snatch one of these out of the blue. You've got to have a claim of right under title or claim of right. And these most commonly come along with a deed that has a bad legal description in it, or a fence that's not exactly on the property line that the parties have accepted for the property line for a long time. Three, use which puts the owner of the subservient estate on notice of his claim. And there's another Wyoming Supreme Court case that I don't have time to run and get that says, what does notice of the claim mean? It means that you got to go out there and act in such a manner that you're probably going to convince the person to tell you to get off their land. And anything short of that isn't adequate notice. And then it has to be continuous and uninterrupted adverse use for at least 10 years in that manner. So all four of those have to be satisfied. And I don't blame the state or the department one bit for making a claim in the alternative that we've got an agreement, we have money that changed hands, we have use for a period of time that exceeds 10 years, and we have a document that's defective, and as an alternative theory under which we have a right to an easement on that property, we make a claim by prescriptive easement. Now, for us to do a knee-jerk reaction to that and say that we are now going to bar the state of Wyoming and our own Game and Fish Department and our own Highway Department by implication, I mean, it'll snowball if it starts, and say that we can't obtain things under a prescriptive easement, keeping in mind that these elements have to be satisfied, and keeping in mind that our Constitution contains provisions that the majority floor leader already alluded to, I just think is ludicrous. I just don't think we ought to do that. And I think that the message that this sends is we don't trust the courts. And we want to take it away from the courts, even recognizing the constitutional prohibition and the extremely narrow set of circumstances and the elements that have to be satisfied. So on and against the bill, I just can't subscribe to this. Every once in a while, somebody wants to take away adverse possession from everybody. They want to take away prescriptive easement. It comes up in other contexts. The most usual, I think, of which I've witnessed not very long ago, there are a lot of county roads in this state that do not have a complete right-of-way documentation. And there have been claims by counties about prescriptive easements. Now, if a prescriptive easement if we're going to borrow the Game and Fish from claiming a prescriptive easement under these circumstances, what's going to happen when the next bill comes up and says, well, we don't think counties can have county roads by prescriptive easement anymore? And, you know, some people are going to like that and some aren't going to like it. And they're going to say, well, I'm a fierce private property rights advocate and I don't want adverse or prescriptive easements or adverse possession on my property for a county road. And their neighbor's going to say, well, you know, I got a different point of view because that's the road that I get to my place on. So I think we ought to think long and hard before we take a meat axe to this. I don't think that it's a problem that's looking for a solution, and I don't think it's a legal theory that's out of control or likely to go out of control. So on and against the bill.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Whip. Just to point out one aspect of this under 23.1302, A Romanet 3, it talks about how the commission can acquire lands and waters in the name of the state. And it talks about purchase, lease, agreement, gift or devise. It can be given to the state. But those next words, not including powers of eminent domain, and if you look under the statute under eminent domain, there's a specific procedure that you can use as the state of Wyoming to exercise your powers of eminent domain. But it seems under this law, even that is forbidden. The state cannot acquire by eminent domain the way this reads. And if I'm wrong, correct me on that. So to me, with this legislation, it makes perfect sense that if we did not allow the state to exercise their powers over eminent domain through an established set of procedure, I don't understand why we would allow them to utilize adverse possession, which, again, as the good representative said, is over a period of time you can basically come into ownership of someone else's property if you do it with hostile, notorious, open, and adversely, or by prescriptive easement. So to me, this bill simply is consistent with what the law already says, which is we're not going to let you do it by eminent domain, and so it makes sense that we also would not let them do it by adverse possession or prescriptive easement. So I just would ask you to think about that, because I think it's a good bill.
Chairman Gorberg.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Whip. My comments were going to be very, very similar to Mr. Speaker's. This is a situation where in statute we've already stated in statute that the game and fish will not use eminent domain, and I think it's totally within our purview as a body policymaking to also add adverse possession or prescriptive easement. I don't think it's going to start the ball rolling in a huge, overpowering way, but we've intentionally limited what game and fish could do, and I think adding these two, adverse possession and prescriptive easement, is a good thing. I obviously like the bill. I'm co-sponsoring it, Mr. Majority Whip. So I encourage the body to move forward with this bill. Thank you.
Representative Shepperson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to talk a little bit about the good chairman of judiciary's comments. First of all, you're saying we should trust the courts. I don't trust government, period. I don't care if it's the courts. I don't care if it's this body. I don't care what branch it is. We need to protect ourselves and our most basic rights. And that's what this is dealing with, our private property rights. You mentioned county roads. This has nothing to do with county roads. We're not talking about the good department that deals with roads and highways. We're talking about the game and fish. Excuse me, there's another proper name. This is the department that needs to work with landowners, not against. This is the department that needs to build constructive relationships, and that is what they testified to in committee, that they want to build constructive relationships, and that if they did something like this, it would forever harm their relationship with landowners. This was a convoluted case, but we're not talking about the case. We're talking simply, should this department have the authority to use these takings? And my answer is no. And this isn't a knee-jerk reaction. When something as significant as this comes up, we need to react. But it's not something that hasn't been well thought about or well talked about. This is something that is most basic to our rights, and I would urge your support for this bill.
Chairman Brown.
Mr. Chairman, just remember what this case was about. The state bought the easement once, and they were trying to make them buy it again. And the state wasn't a matter that people were sneaking on there with their fishing poles and going fishing. It was open, notorious, hostile use for longer than 10 years. When there was an understanding that it was not anything wrongful, it was pursuant to an agreement. And there was a hyper-technicality in the deeding instrument. And they said, because of that hyper-technicality, we want you to buy it again. And under those circumstances, I think a claim for prescriptive easement is very appropriate.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill, I guess you could change the language to, we really meant what we said in the Constitution when we said you couldn't do this. If you look at Article 1, Section 33, that's the one I read before that says private property shall not be taken or damaged for public or private use without just compensation. That's the only way they can do it. Article 1, Section 32 says private property shall not be taken for private use unless by consent of the owner. And then it lists, except for private ways of necessity, for reservoirs, drains, flumes, ditches, or across other lands, or for agriculture, mining, milling, domestic, or sanitary purposes. And then it says, nor in any case without due compensation. Adverse possession is taking without compensation. It's just saying, we used it for 10 years, we own it, you don't get anything tough. Our Constitution prohibits that. What I'm afraid of here, I mean, I agree that the state of Wyoming should not be taking ranchers' land with by adverse possession. I don't think they can do it, and I think the Constitution's real clear that says that they can't do it. And if we want to pass a bill that says we really mean it, I guess that's fine, too, except for what I'm worried about are the consequences of that, where we didn't say we really meant it in other places. And so the argument is that by implication, we intend that to happen. Well, I don't know if we can intend that to happen over the Constitution, so maybe my argument is harmless. But when we do these bills where we've already passed a statute or our Constitution says that we can't do this, when we say we really mean it, sometimes there are consequences we can't anticipate. And so I'd urge the body to pass this bill on to second reading. But I'd also urge you to think about the consequences of saying we really mean it in a statute when we said you can't do it in a constitution.
Chairman Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Whip. This bill is not about not getting just compensation. It's about using these methods of gaining possession of private property rights. Now, at some point in time in our statutes, this body saw the need to put in statute that Game and Fish did not have the authority to use eminent domain. It doesn't matter. Just compensation doesn't enter into the argument. And the argument is, do we want them to use these methods with or without? They're just compensation is part of it. I don't think there's not an argument there. But do we want them to have the authority to use these three methods to take private property? And many years ago, we already decided we weren't going to allow them to use eminent domain. And we are merely adding, and it came about as a result of the case law, but it's not because of the case law. It was just merely the case law brought it to the attention of my good colleague from Natrona County. And both of us agree that this needs to be further explained in statute to add two other ways, adverse possession and prescriptive easement. The argument is not about they're going to take it without just compensation. The argument is about, are we going to limit what Game and Fish, their tools of how they're going to go about acquiring land, private property rights. And I think this is totally an acceptable bill. I think it's a good bill, and I don't see, and I think it's a policy decision to be made by this body. Statute, new statute makes new case law. It's just that simple. So on and in favor of the bill.
Any other discussion before the sponsor? Representative Shepperson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And we've debated it enough. I know everybody knows how they're going to vote. But I guess if this is double saying what we really mean in the Constitution, then let's do it. We can pass a law and make it absolutely crystal clear, or we can leave it to the lawyers to litigate it and hope that it comes out the right way. So I'd urge your support. Thank you.
Is there any other discussion? You ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman McConey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 100 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no. House Bill 100 has passed the Committee of the Whole.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion carries.
The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. Speaker, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg leave to report as follows. House Bill 20, amended, recommended, do pass. House Bill 21, recommended, do pass. Representative Lubno moved that the Committee of the Whole rise and sit again, and the motion prevailed. House Bill 27, in accordance to H. Rule 85-A, Representative Teeters withdrew the bill from the general file. House Bill 44, in accordance with the House Rule 851, Representative Childers withdrew the House bill from the general file. House Bill 72, amended and further amended, recommended, do pass. House Bill 86, recommended, do pass. House Bill 100, recommended, do pass. Signed, Representative Shepperson, Chairman.
Mr. Speaker, I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The Committee of the Whole report has been adopted. We are at that order of a business, messages from the Senate.
Message number 107. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 4, Elections, Military, and Overseas Voters. Ayes 30, no 0. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 108. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 18, Federal Motor Carrier Safety Act Compliance. Ayes 23, no 7. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 109. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 21, Property Tax Exemption for Nonprofit Museum. Ayes 29, noes 1. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 110. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 28, State Parks Volunteers. Ayes 23, noes 7. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 111. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 32, State Parks Trails. Ayes 29, noes 1. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 112. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 42, Choice License Plates for Disabled Veterans. Ayes 28, noes 2. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 113. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 23, Mail Ballot Elections. Ayes 28, noes 2. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 114. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 26, County Roads, Speed Limits, and Local Authority to Alter. Ayes 23, noes 7. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
We are at that order of business. Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 29, respectfully reports same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Barbuto, Brown, Kennedy, Crone, Throne. No, Brechtel, Green, Nicholas, Peasley. Signed, Representative Brown, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 8, respectfully reports same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Blake, Camel, Davison, Eklund, Hunt, Laux, Moniz, Semlek, Danswanitzer. Signed, Representative Semlek, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 98, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Blickery, Byrd, Illaway, Croker, Patton, Roscoe, Shepperson, Stubson. Excused, Yeagy. Signed, Representative Illaway, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 3, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Blickery, Byrd, Illaway, Yeagy, Croker, Patton, Roscoe, Shepperson. Excused, Stubson. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 10, Health, Labor, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 50, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Kraft, Green, Harvey, Miller, Peasley. No, Barbuto, Gay, Gingrey, Hunt. Signed, Representative Miller, Vice Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 15, respectfully comes back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Blake, Camel, Davison, Eklund, Hunt, Laux, Moniz, Semlek, Zwanitzer, Dan. Signed, Representative Semlek, Chairman.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to refer House Bill 50 to your committee, number 2, Appropriations, now that it has been read back in. I also would like to refer House Bill 154 to Committee 9, Transportation.
The motion is to re-refer House Bill 50 to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. It's also moved to move re-refer House Bill 154 to Committee Number 8, Transportation. And hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Chairman Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I move that House Bill 29 be re-referred to the Appropriations Committee. It does have a fiscal appropriation attached to it.
Bill, was it?
29.
Motion is to re-refer House Bill 29 to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Hearing no objections, it is ordered. All right. Committee announcements. Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock in room H18 to consider House Bill 111, Public Works and Contracts, House Bill 112, Mining Permits, and House Bill 114, Insurance Premiums, Failure to Pay.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 6, Travel, will meet in room 302, excuse me, to take up House Bill 101, Vicious Animals, Interference with Game Wardens, and House Bill 47, excuse me, State Parks User Fee Program, tomorrow morning.
Chairman Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 8, Transportation and Military Affairs, will meet 10 minutes after adjournment today in room H17 to hear two bills, House Bill 22, phased-in fuel tax increase, and House Bill 33, exceeding speed limit while passing. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 10 will meet Wednesday, January 19th upon adjournment in room H17 to hear consider the following bills. House Bill 73, continued dental services freedom bill. House Bill 65, marital counseling. House Bill 35, health care choice protection act.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move to re-refer House Bill 27 to Committee Number 2, Appropriations.
It's moved to re-refer House Bill 27 to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move to re-refer House Bill 44 to Appropriations.
Motion is to re-refer House Bill 44 to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Chairman Brown.
Mr. Speaker, your Judiciary Committee number 1 will meet tomorrow morning at 7:30 a.m. in room H8 to consider the following bills. House Bill 75, Victim Notification Amendments. House Bill 71, Seat Belts, Evidence and Civil Actions. House Bill 68, Violent Felony Definition Expansion. And House Bill 69, Prescriptions for Marijuana Invalid.
Vice Chairman Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 3 will meet Wednesday, January 19th, 2011 at 8 a.m. in room H11. We will consider the following bills, House Bill 54, Hobby Firearm Dealers, and House Bill 117, Data Processing Services Centers Tax Exemptions.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 4, Education, will meet Wednesday, January 19th upon adjournment in room 302 for consideration of House Bill 127, School Finance Recalibration.
And as an announcement, ladies and gentlemen, we have our photographers here in the basement conference room. It looks like they'll be here today until 5:30 or 6, and we'll be here again tomorrow from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. to take your official legislative portrait. And so if you haven't done that, please go down and do that. I'm told sooner is better than later. Representative Stubson.
Mr. Speaker, privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
Just to remind the body, the Capitol Commission Bible study will be over in the Hathaway Atrium. It's not Hathaway, Herschler Atrium, tomorrow morning starting at 6:30, and everybody's welcome.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. General file for tomorrow will be House Bill 76, House Bill 87, House Bill 110. You will find that this is exactly the order that you have on the sheet that was handed out today. House Bill 110, House Bill 113, House Bill 109, Joint Resolution 2, House Bill 2, 4, 9, 24, 30, 74, and 10. With that, Mr. Speaker, I move that the House adjourn until 10 a.m. tomorrow, January 19th, 2011.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The House is adjourned until Wednesday, January 19th, 2011, 10 a.m.